InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 45 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Chris Maher of the Content Marketing Academy in the UK. Chris shares with us his philosophy of learning and educating at the same time. His key to success is building trust quickly, in fact, faster than any of your competitors build trust with the audience, and continue to develop those relationships by consistently delivering great value. This is another fascinating interview with a lot of valuable lessons, so grab a pen and a notebook and let's head into the hive and get the buzz from Chris Maher. Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have here with me on today's episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from the other side of the world in Leven, which is a little seaside town in Fife, set in the east central lowlands of Scotland, Chris Maher, who is the founder of the Content Marketing Academy and a self-described teacher and student of content marketing. Welcome, Chris. It's a privilege to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Jürgen. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm excited about getting stuck into all the questions you've got for me today.
Okay, yeah, I'd love to talk to you about content marketing. Now, Marcus Sheridan suggested we interview you on the podcast, so a big shout out to Marcus.
Yeah, Marcus is a great guy. It's really good that you had him on the show as well. And yeah, shout out to Marcus. Thanks very much for making the suggestion and introduction.
Now, I really like your philosophy of being an educator as well as a dedicated student. So on two levels, because a commitment to your own learning and providing value to those you're educating. And secondly, having that attitude means that, you know, simply by teaching what you know, you also learn.
Yes, it's a really important step, I think, in any learning is that, and I know we're going to talk a lot about this in the show, but there's the whole, you know, study, practice, teach sort of philosophy. That's kind of mine. You know, you study the materials, you practice them, and then you teach them. And every one of those stages is a learning stage, right? You learn when you study, you learn when you practice, you learn when you teach.
Yeah, that's really good. I love it. Now, before we start talking more about content marketing and education through content and innovation and those kind of things, let's find out a little bit more about you as a person. So when you were a young child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
As a young child, you know, I think of like some random things that I wanted to do when I grew up. I remember talking, like, being fascinated by the guys in McDonald's because they had a hat, right? I'm like obsessed with, I'm wearing a hat just now. I've been obsessed with hats since a young age. I don't know where that came from, but there's pictures of me as a child just wearing hats all the time. And I remember saying to my mum at one point that I wanted to work in McDonald's because they had hats. Like, that's not really a great aspirational sort of message to anybody, but I remember that. I don't know if, like, it's a really tough question for me because I think I went through, without going on too much, I think I went through most of my childhood and through high school even, you know, in, like, secondary school, not really knowing what I wanted to do, you know? I mean, one of the big inspirations, I was really inspired when I was about 15. I started playing guitar and I wanted to be a guitarist. I think that's probably like the moment in time I can remember actually wanting to be something when I was about 15 years old, about 14 or 15 when I really started to get into guitar. So I think that's probably the first moment I realised that I could actually do something and learn something and be good at something. So yeah, so probably that was the most sort of like standout memory from being in my youth.
Okay, that's fascinating. Do you still play guitar now?
I do still play guitar now, yeah, and I've been in a few bands, I've done some amateur recordings, and I'm sure I'll do more and more as time goes on. But right now, for the last 3 or 4 years since starting the business, I've not really done much, but yeah, I still play guitar.
That's fascinating, because a lot of people I'm connected with that are in the internet business are also musicians, are hobby musicians, or, you know, pretty serious hobby musicians, I would say.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, so what brought you around to an online business then and into the idea of education through content?
I'll try and keep the story as short as I can, but I think really like the best, the sort of the key parts of the story is that in about 2010, I was working for an organisation, the University of St Andrews, right, a public sector organisation, And I worked there from when I was 19 through to when I was 29. I left my job in 2011 to go to university full time to do my degree. So I kind of did it all kind of a bit backwards, a bit in reverse. But like, there's key points here. Like, I think 2007, 2008, 2009. That's when kind of like social media and the internet was starting to come take a little bit more shape into what we know it to be now, right? And there's a lot of key things that happened at that time. And at the time, I was kind of like in a management sort of role, and I had teams of people working for me, but I also served a huge audience, like of students in the department that I worked in. So I was massively interested in communications. So social media and communications kind of go hand in hand. So I started playing around with Twitter and Facebook and lots of other platforms and systems for communication surveys, that sort of stuff, like Google Forms and all that kind of stuff when I was in his early days. And it led me to read a lot and to study a lot about what was happening out there. We've kind of touched on that already. And the one book that kind of really sort of kicked me in the butt was Gary Vaynerchuk's Crush It. And I read that in 2010. And that was the reason that I wrote my first blog article. And after reading that book, and Gary Stoll, probably the most consistent messages that I can think of from anybody is from Gary Vaynerchuk. And he's still saying the same things now as he was back then. And I read that book and said to myself, you know what? I know that I want to advance my career and learn and develop, but I don't want to write another CV ever again, right? That was kind of like the whole message I got from that book. And I thought, I'm going to start a blog. I'm going to get my ideas, my thoughts, the things I'm learning and the things that I'm doing and my personality out there. And if someone wants to hire me, they'll hire me for me and not because I've sent out 50 CVs to 50 different companies or whatever. So that was like a big part of that whole journey. Little did I know at that time that that was the start of me being an entrepreneur or whatever you want to call it. And I got my first contract as a consultant off the back of writing a blog. The website was rubbish. And I don't really want to go back and read those blog articles, but at the same time, it got me out there. People recognised me, someone got in touch with me and said, hey, I like what you're doing, it'd be great if you could come in and see if you can help with a company. You know, long story short, it kind of resulted in my first contract. And then it took me a few years just to figure out what my business was going to look like. I've worked with some businesses, I started a music promotional company and started thinking about, and immediately the first thing we did was set up a blog and get really heavily into social. I helped out companies in my spare time, you know, when I was still working. So there's a lot going on of me just trying to figure it out. So it was like between 2010 and about 2013 when I actually set up my own limited company. That was a period of a journey of discovery through that whole 3 or 4 years of trying to figure out what it was that I kind of wanted to do. And I did that while I was a full-time student at university, getting my honours degree in business as well. So that whole period there was me like trying lots of different things out in the online world. So it kind of like, I don't know, I grew up with computers as well, Jürgen. So like my dad was a computer programmer. We had computers in the house from my very early memories. So computers were always a thing. One of my stepbrothers is heavily into computers and data management, and it's just a thing that I was always interested in. So I think social media and the internet kind of just lent itself to me, I think. And I was just always enjoyed it and I love it. And I put, you know, a lot of time and effort into it.
That's an interesting story. And I particularly like, you know, how you use that blog post to essentially replace all your CVs and get the message out there of what you were about. And then, presumably, if somebody was interested in finding out more about you, you said go read my blog.
Exactly. That's what we still teach today, isn't it? I mean, if someone says, you know, I really want to get myself out there more, I'm fed up in the job that I'm in and I wanted to be a freelancer or I want to start my own business, it's like, well, you need to get your content out there. You need to give people a reason to want to spend time with you. So it's the same principles, except that I didn't really... Reading Crush It was my first piece of content marketing education, I would say. But it wasn't really called, I mean, it wasn't really widely called that back then. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you wrote something in the Fife Business Journal that I kind of read and I thought, wow, that's really eloquent. I wish I'd said that because it's so aligned with my philosophy. And I'll just quote from that because it's so good. Your website should be generating customers for your business. And if it's not, then something needs to change. Your website has the potential to be the number one marketing asset. This is not about design. This is about marketing, plain and simple. The purpose of your website should be to turn an anxious visitor into a confident customer. Mm-hmm. So that's just brilliant.
Yeah. It's funny when someone reads something back that you've written before, you're like, did I really write that? Yeah.
Yeah. It's you know, we position our business as making websites achieve more, and really that encapsulates our whole philosophy really well.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of like cut through all of that, and I mean, this is something that you learn, I think, as you develop your ideas around marketing and business. And I think we're all in the same business, and it's the business of trust, right? And I think that whether it's your website or your content or meeting someone in person for the first time or going to a workshop or whatever, the key thing that every single person that's put on this planet to build a business or whatever it is they're trying to do is to build trust as quickly as possible with that person, with that customer, with that audience member, whatever it is you want to call them. I think that's the key. The key to success is building trust quickly. And if you can do it faster than your competition, if you can do it faster than somebody else that provides a similar product or services that you do, then you've got much more chance of building that relationship.
Exactly. And I, you know, I do a lot of training workshops on content because people kind of have this thing about writing content, and that for some reason it seems to be difficult. I mean, I have to admit I find it hard sometimes. But if you compare it to, you know, if you go into a physical store and you want to buy a small item, then the level of trust that you have to establish to buy a small item is fairly small. So you get that level of trust pretty quickly because it's more about, does the product serve my needs? And you know, there's no big risk. If you're going to buy a much bigger item, then the relationship thing becomes a lot more important. And, you know, we're all... we all find it fairly easy, really, to establish relationships with other people when we're face-to-face across from them. Now, we might not get on with everybody, but, you know, we do all find it fairly easy to establish relationships. And if you get that relationship going, then, you know, you will likely buy the big item if that's what you're looking for and need. And it really is the same online, isn't it?
It definitely is. I mean, I always use an example like that I had recently. Was that going to buy my dad a headlamp for running in the dark, right? Because in, you know, we're in Scotland here, so in the winter time it's dark and it's dark all day pretty much. And so you have to, I was thinking like, what I don't even know the first thing about headlamps, right? So what's the first thing what am I going to do? I'm going to go online and I'm going to search like, what are the best headlamps for running in the dark, right? And lo and behold, a couple of people had written the top 10, reviewed a top 10 or did a top 10 list of reviews for headlamps, right? So someone had written this piece of content to help me make a buying decision. That was the key thing, right? It's not a big ticket item. It's maybe £100 or something like that. But I didn't know anything. I needed to be educated about it. And it's the same with a pair of socks, right? I mean, I could buy a pair of socks out of like a local store for £5 or something like that and not care as long as they're high quality. But if I'm a mountaineer, then I'm going to be studying the quality. You know, it's a totally different level of interest required for a pair of socks, depending on the application. So, like, this people out there, like, you know, that are creating this content to help us to buy. That's to make a great buying decision, to make sure that we don't get ripped off, we don't make a bad decision, and we don't have that whole buyer's remorse thing. So, yeah, I think this is the way. This is what we do now. You know.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so tell us a little bit about the Content Marketing Academy then.
Yeah, so the Content Marketing Academy is, I'll make a long story quite short. I think it's been sort of 3 years since we've been in business. So a lot's kind of like happened in that time. So the Content Marketing Academy didn't start as the Content Marketing Academy. It started as Learning Every Day, which was a general marketing company. And in that time, we've changed a lot of what we've done, including the name of our business. And it all came from starting a conference, an event. In 2014, we started the Content Marketing Academy. And really, from that point, we started to build a community around that single brand from our company. and that just the kind of signals were there from the marketplace. The our customers were talking a lot more about it, and it just made sense for us to kind of go into that space. So I guess what someone in marketing might call it niching down, perhaps. You know, we took our general company and we made it into a much more refined company with a different name and a different purpose, perhaps, as well. And it gave people a clearer understanding of what it was that we were set here to do, and how we were going to serve them. So we built a community around that. We built up a big Facebook group, and then we went on and built our organisation out of that. And it's changed so dramatically in such a short space of time. So, you know, I guess the whole thing there is for us was just listening to the market, listening to our customers, and kind of letting them lead us a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically a training program or training programs that you run?
Yeah. So again, it's kind of morphed into different things. So we started off as like running workshops and teaching and consulting and sort of some agency work as well to sort of get the work done for our clients. And then over a course of that period of time, we've turned into more of an events organization in some respects. But also into a membership organisation as well. So we now have, for about the last year or so, not quite a year, maybe about 10 months, we have had a membership element to our business. So we have, it's called the Content Marketing Academy Membership Community, or the CMA. And it's for small business owners, small to medium enterprises, entrepreneurs, or people who are really, they want to become entrepreneurs or maybe in a job just now and they want to kind of break out from that. It's a place for them to join and join their peers. It's kind of like a business to business or a business support or peer-to-peer support network. So it's almost like a business network, except it's at a completely different level. And we basically started that about a year ago, realizing that people wanted more and they wanted to be a big part of what we were doing. So we charged like a small annual or monthly fee to be a part of that community. And it's just an amazing community. It's really thriving. We're getting in the forums, there's like over 1,000 messages a day. It's really just, it's been one of the best things. In fact, it's been the best thing that I've done in the 3 years that I've been in business.
It's interesting. And so what role does, you know, that you mentioned forums and Facebook groups, what role does that social engagement with, you know, the members amongst themselves play?
Yeah. So the building an audience is absolutely crucial in the day that we live in now. If you don't have an audience, you don't have anyone to buy from you. So this is like the very first step. I mean, if you're to sort of reverse engineer the last 3 years for us, building a community is probably the best thing that we could have possibly done. If we didn't do that, we wouldn't be where we are right now, that's for sure. So we just made it, I think we made it really easy for our potential customers and our customers to just be close to us at all times, and gave them a reason to do that. So like a Facebook group's a good example of that. We use Slack now more, and we have people coming into our Slack community all the time now. And it's just a great, from a business perspective, you can see the conversations they're having, the challenges they have, you can help them quickly, more directly. And you can just get a lot of information really about what they're up to, and it allows you to kind of shape your business around that. So that was the reason that we did it. We wanted to get closer to our customers effectively.
Sounds fascinating. And you run a podcast as well, right?
Yeah, so I mean, like when it comes to the content piece, Jorgen, we have to kind of practice what we preach, right? So blogs, podcasts, videos. I mean, a lot of the content I do now is live content, so Instagram stories, Snapchat stories, Facebook Live, and then the kind of more chunky content that we do now is mainly focus on how I can serve the community better. So a lot of the content that I create is going into the private membership stuff now, because that's where my main audience is, and I think it's important that I serve them where they are.
Okay, yeah. No, Facebook Live, I've just started using Facebook Live. That's kind of fascinating. And I'm taking part in this 30-day challenge just to learn how to use it. But, yeah.
All right, okay. I think, yeah, Facebook Live's really interesting and it's amazing. I think it's the way the video's going is incredible. And if you're listening to this and you're not looking at live broadcasting, you definitely need to be researching it and following some people that are doing some great stuff there.
And again, you know, it comes back to what you were saying earlier. It's not just about getting on the video and playing with Facebook Live. It's about getting there, taking your message to an audience, building that audience, and then delivering exceptional value in the form of, you know, information, isn't that education?
I think the key thing is that wherever you turn up consistently and you turn up to deliver value every single time. So whether it be Facebook Live and you're doing it for free, or you're doing it in your community and you always turn up and try to deliver more value than what people are expecting from you. I think the biggest challenge that we've got right now, especially with the barriers have never been so low to content production, right? So you can go, you can swipe your phone up, click record, and you can be on Periscope, Facebook Live, Snapchat stories, Instagram stories, and you can create content there. Now, that's a great opportunity that we all have, right, to do that. The obvious, like, consideration to this whole thing when you see the big picture is that it's so easy that a lot of the content is really poor, right? And that's when LinkedIn started doing their pulse, and you could blog on LinkedIn. Suddenly, everybody was blogging, and it was just rubbish. So, like, there's this sort of, like, problem. I think there's going to be a big challenge, and that if people's experience with Facebook Live is not great, then they're not going to watch any more Facebook Live videos. Just like Blab. Blab kind of died a little bit there as well, a little bit died big time. And a big part of that was that people weren't coming back to the platform, and they didn't value the content that was coming out there. So because we can create content for free, I think a lot of the content is low quality. But if you can turn up and consistently and persistently show up with great value, I think that that will naturally sort of like catch the attention of your audience, and people are skeptical now as well, Jürgen. I think, you know, they're not going to trust you just as quickly as perhaps they did in the past, because they've been exposed to so many, you know, they've been ripped off or they've been exposed to spam and all the rest of it. So I think that you have to turn up consistently with high quality.
Best online courses apparently only get about a 10 or 20% completion rate, which is kind of scary when you think that's the best, that's the benchmark. But I know that, you know, the ones that have a lot of social engagement and people supporting one another through that social media actually do a lot better than that.
Yes, I think that a big part of this is about bringing the right people together. I mean, you know, if you've been in business for any length of time, you'll have heard people talking about, like, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with and things like that. Mm. And I think that kind of, like, really, that's really important to get around the right people. So, for example, we've built a membership organization as part of a part of what we do. And it was something that we started officially in October last year. We've been in it for about 10 months now. And it's been amazing. It's been one of the best things, I think, that we've done in our business as far as a business service is concerned. And I think it'll be the future of our business as well, the foundation of our business and how we grow. And there's lots of things. There's lots of reasons why it works really, really well. You know, it's a subscription-based business. So for, you know, for us as a business, it makes a lot of sense to do that. But having people commit to something and get involved in a community, a business network, is really important as well. People want to be part of something bigger than themselves, and they want to be around people that have got the same objectives or the same, not just the same objectives, but the same values as them or the same mindset. So my job as a facilitator is to curate those people, right? So it's kind of like joining a BNI or joining Weight Watchers or joining Avon or something like that, right? You join because you want to be part of this thing. You agree with the values, or you want to be part of the culture or whatever. And it's the same sort of thing that I'm trying to do with our membership as well. And it's the reasons why you would want to build any community, I think, is to give people, get people around the right people for them, and allow them to learn together and to support each other and support each other in their challenges and problems. And that's what an active, thriving community will do. Is, like, for example, there's probably messages being sent in the forum right now between lots and lots of people, and I'm not even there. And that's when you know that you've got something really special.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. Now, I attended a 2-day masterclass last week with two programs run by the same people. So I'll give a big shout out to Troy Dean, and it's Rockstar Empires and cool. WP Elevation. So the idea of the mastermind is getting a group of people together to work on each other's businesses. And that was just such an amazing experience. And it was transformative for a lot of people, including myself. So I'm sort of completely revamping my business model as a result of that. But you're right, the community, you know, so there were only 20 or so businesses represented there, but the community within WP Elevation in particular is about 200 or so right around the world. So it's the biggest WordPress consulting program around. And okay. That community kind of runs itself essentially, and it really is quite amazing. And people, when they get into that kind of community, they, you know, if they don't already have an abundance mindset, they kind of develop that. And it's really great to be in there.
Yes, that's exactly it. I think that this people, like, for example, you talked about the whole 20% of courses are, and you know, 20% of people sort of complete courses and the other 80% don't. And I think that that's a key point. I think that it's like for our membership isn't a course, it's a community. And there's content there that you can learn, you can join our webinars, you can look back through all the calls we've had in the past, and all of that kind of stuff's there. But people don't stay because of that. They stay because of the people and the community.
That's right. And that's the experience that we're seeing in you know, I'm observing that as a member in those communities.
Yes, that's really important. Yeah. It's a really important part. I think a lot of people do miss that, though. They're like, you know, they want to do courses, but I think a big part of it's about building the community.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some people think they can get to number one on Google with a magic bullet as well, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah. It takes time.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, education is really the big message here, and I guess my kind of process for content marketing, in fact, my process for a lot of things begins with, you know, what does your audience want, and who is your audience, and who are you talking to, and what are they value, so, you know, you're not wasting their time. So you got any thoughts on that?
When it comes to educational type content, I think that we touched on it a little bit before when we were talking about helping people to make an educated buying decision, which is just kind of like one element of content, or one sort of angle for content marketing. I think that it's about not just understanding who your audience is, but what their problems are, and what questions they have, and you know, how can you react to them? How can you be that person that they go to for advice? Become that go-to person that they see as the person that knows more about that than everyone else, or someone that's willing to help them. I think that's probably like a bigger picture is being someone that's seen to be someone that's willing to help is key. And you get that through your content. You know, you showcase that by providing content that helps people, you know. And I think you have to give a lot away to make that impact these days. So I think it's really important to think about your content. And, you know, even this podcast, for example, is like, well, what's, you know, someone listening today, what are they really going to get from listening to this? You know, I think it's a really important question when you're writing a blog article, or you're recording a video, or you're producing a podcast, is that you think to yourself, well, what's the outcome for the audience? What are they going to learn something, or are they going to be entertained, or is it going to be interesting, or is it going to get them thinking? Are they going to have, you know, are they going to have a better life because of this, or are they going to grow their business because of it? Or, you know, there's got to be something for the person that's reading, watching, listening.
Yeah, I have to laugh. Now, just for information, because we have had some technical difficulties and we've sort of resumed the interview, so I'm going to splice some stuff in. So if we refer to something that doesn't seem to be in the interview, it might be in that area that I've chopped out because of the technical difficulties. But I mentioned earlier about the 30-day Facebook Live challenge that I'm doing, and I did the second of those today. Part of that is me being comfortable using Facebook Live and learning how to use the technology, but also delivering some really good content doing that. So when I started the 30-day live challenge, I thought, we've been running these content workshops, and I thought there's easily 30 days of 10-minute content there, so I'm going to talk about that. And today I talked about the 5 success principles, and the first of those is know your outcome. So yeah, that's exactly what you're just saying.
Got it. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, start with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey would say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. And I think that, I honestly think as well, just to kind of like think about the question and what you're asking really, Jürgen, as well, is that if you're not doing this stuff, then you're missing out on a massive, massive opportunity. And it's not even that you're missing out on a massive opportunity. I think if you're not doing it, you're losing, actually, as well. It's not that you're just not gaining, you're actually losing, because you've got this this risk now that your competitors or someone else in your space is entertaining your audience right now, and you're not. And they're building that trust with that audience, and you're not. And when it comes to buying something or a solution or getting more advice, they're not going to be phoning you. They're not going to be contacting you. They're going to be contacting the person that's taken the time to build that relationship with them. So you've got this risk right now that your competition could potentially cannibalize your audience, right? They could take your audience away from you through all of this stuff. And it's more important now than ever to get involved in all the things that we're talking about today and all the other things that you probably cover in your other podcast shows as well. And make sure that you're out there, and you're out there to do the right thing, which is to help people and to provide a source of information, education, inspiration and motivation, all of that kind of good stuff.
That's right. And Marcus said on the podcast interview which I did with him, he basically said the same thing. And he was talking about people being afraid of sharing information that they thought might be a secret or might be, might inform their competitors or something. But he said exactly the same thing. Well, if you keep it secret and your competitors out there educating your audience, essentially, then who are they going to go to when they need something?
Exactly. Yeah, the secret sauce.
Exactly, yeah. And at the end of the day, I remember this in the corporate world, there was a lot of issue around what clients told us as a supplier to a B2B supplier, and they felt that they had all these secrets that they needed to protect and didn't want to tell us. And I kind of kept reminding people, well, some of the stuff isn't actually rocket science. You could figure it out. So it actually makes things easier if you share the information.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have this is a common question for anybody listening, I guess, as well, is that it is a common, it's a real thing. It's a real fear. People think that they're going to share their content and someone will steal it, or the competition will steal it. And the reality is the competition could probably know it already. And if they need to, they could probably find it out quite easily as well.
But
Jay Baer said this to me on a call a while back, and he said to me, having all the right ingredients and the best recipe for making a cake doesn't make you a great chef. So I think that's always stuck with me, and that there's a lot more to it than just the recipe and the ingredients. There's other elements in there that make you a success or make you successful at what you do. So you don't have to worry if you're going out there to share your content. There's people might steal it. They probably won't, because most people are lazy, and they don't act upon the information you're sending out there. They realize what through your education, you're effectively showing them what you can do instead of telling them. And by doing that, they say, that sounds really great. This person, this company know what they're talking about. I'm going to go and I'm going to do business with them. That's kind of like the sort of long story short, I guess.
Exactly right. And the example of the chef is a good one, because you've got all these cooking shows, and you'd know Jamie Oliver really well. I mean, those guys get on TV and they share their recipes and they actually show you how to do it. Well, can I then cook something up like Jamie Oliver does? Probably not. He earns a lot of money. Those guys earn a lot of money by presenting on television and so on. But, most people are never going to be as good cooks as they are, as you say.
Yep.
And then the other example is, we're doing this podcast, and I know you're doing a podcast. I tell people how to do podcasts. I basically give them the process and so on. And as you say, 90% of the people are too lazy to do it, or don't see the value in doing it and don't want to spend the time doing it. And so, it's easy to share the information, but it's hard to actually take it and translate it and make it work for you.
Exactly. Yep. So there's no fear there. In fact, people have built their whole business around... there's no reason to be afraid, sorry, is what I meant to say there. I think that there's people that have built their whole business around giving it all away. And they've built successful business because of it. So, yeah, there's too many good case studies out there to say that it doesn't work. It's just getting outside of your comfort zone a little bit.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been fascinating, Chris. I really appreciate you spending time with us, and I love these podcasts because I always learn so much as well. So, you know, part of it's about delivering some good information to an audience, but I learn so much as well. So, you know, I think we're going to move on to the Buzz, our innovation round, which is designed to help our audience who, you know, they're primarily innovators and leaders in their field, and with some tips from your experience.
Sounds great.
So I'm going to ask a series of 5 questions, and hopefully you're going to give us some really insightful answers that inspires everyone and gets them doing something awesome.
Well, no pressure then, right?
Yeah. So what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I mean, I always think about innovation as like something new, right? Something that someone's never done before. But for people in small businesses or small to medium enterprises, I don't think that strictly could be the case. I think the number one thing that you need to have for... to be more innovative or to sort of embrace innovation to be more innovative, generally speaking, is to have ideas, right? Is to have more ideas and allow yourself and give yourself permission to create ideas, make time for it. So I think that's a key thing is new ideas, wacky ideas, any ideas really, and to have that as a culture in your life, in your business, in your organization.
Yeah, that's it. That's great advice. I always say to people, you know, innovation is doing something different, but not for the sake of doing it different, but for the sake of adding value and improving on something. So it could be incremental or it could be transformational or kind of disruptive.
Yeah.
So
innovation in a small business, though, like, because you've got to think to yourself, well, what are the majority of businesses in the world are small enterprises, aren't they? They're the ones that kind of make up the bulk of businesses in the world. And you think, well, what does innovation mean to a small business? And it could be simply to do something that other people just aren't doing, for example. Like one of the examples that came up this morning in our chat, in our forums, was Twitter video replies, right? Now, Twitter video has been around for a long time. You can tweet a video to someone. You've been able to do that for maybe a couple of years now. But no one's really tapping into Twitter video replies. So would you say that's innovative or just resourceful, right? So, or is it an innovative way to use Twitter? And it probably could be classed as somewhere in there, I think. As you've not invented it, you didn't invent the actual thing.
That's right.
But you've kind of done it differently. You've done something slightly different. And I think that's what I think innovation means, I think, in small businesses, to kind of do something slightly different, or do it better, do it faster, do it a better quality, something like that.
And adding value to somebody.
Yes, hugely.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Yeah, ideas are key. They're currency. I think the best thing I ever did was read The Idea, Becoming an Idea Machine by James Altucher. Listened to it on audio, read the book a whole bunch of times, and like one of the exercises in that book is he gets you to write down 10 ideas every single day, and I did that. I've not done it, I don't do it every day now, but I did it for every day for a long time, and I still do the practice now, which is like, for example, someone messaged me on Instagram today saying that they would like to think about how they could incorporate subscription into their business. So one of my tasks for later on today is to give them 10 ideas. So those 10 ideas, I'm giving them away, but by just exercising that idea muscle, I can think of ideas really, really quickly now. And over a period of time, you get better at thinking of better ideas as well. So the idea of Becoming an Idea Machine by James Altucher was kind of like a catalyst there. Just me kind of like really sort of just starting to understand how important ideas are. And you know how you meet people who are just like ideas people. They'll just fire tons of ideas at you. Like those are the people that you need to be around, and it can have its own problems because, you know, you need to figure out which ideas are the best ideas. So that's the next step.
Yeah.
But you can allow yourself to think of crazy ideas, like, and just allow that that muscle, that ideal muscle, to be exercised is really, 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 really important, especially now when everybody's done everything. So how can you do something just a little bit different? You've got to get the ideas. And the one thing I've learned by doing this is that, see, when you're thinking of 10 ideas, when you get to idea 7, idea 8, 9, and 10 are really hard. So, but that's you doing the exercise, you know, that's you pushing yourself. So I think that's a great exercise to go through. So for example, I do it all the time. I do it all the time. I'll even go into Snapchat sometimes and say, hey, you know, give me a challenge you're having just now. I'll come up with 10 ideas for you. I put in my proposals for consulting. I'll come up with 20 ideas for you, or whatever. So it's kind of like, I think it's a really good skill to have. And it's a skill that anybody can do, or anybody could have if they practice it. But I just think it's massively important for innovating and to come up with fresh and new approaches.
That's great advice. So I've just opened up the Amazon Kindle store here, Becoming an Idea Machine by Claudia and James Altucher.
Yep.
And I think Claudia is the author, according to this. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes, but I see that cover and it looks familiar, so I wonder if I've got it in my collection, but I don't recall reading it.
Yeah,
it's the sort of thing I would probably download and add to my collection. I've got probably hundreds of books in my Kindle thing, and you know, there's about 80% of them still to be read.
Yep. Yeah. I know the feeling.
Now, I actually find it easy. I actually find the first couple hardest. Once I get going, and then my mind seems to work that way. Once I get going, there's sort of ideas keep popping in.
Cool.
It's a real problem when something comes into my head when I'm in the middle of the night, when I want to get back to sleep, and then I can't sleep because the ideas start to come in.
Yep. Mm. Exactly. I think we all kind of suffer from that as well. But I think the key thing is trying to think of different things. I think you're probably going to speak about it later on as well, but I think you need to get out of your own sort of like your own frame as well. Like, you know, I think a lot about content marketing and business, but like, you know, you're not going to do anything different there if you're not exposing yourself to different things, you know, like different books and different podcasts. So instead of listening to content marketing or business podcasts all the time, I should really go out and listen to something entirely different, or read a bunch of books that other people just wouldn't read. You know, a book on or a book on like someone's autobiography that's not from a business background, or just anything really that's going to inspire you in a different way. And it can be really interesting. You'll learn something, but it also kind of like gets you thinking just a little bit differently as well. So I think having ideas is great, but having ideas from different sources are good too.
All right, that's great advice. So what's your favorite tool or system for improving your productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
So many tools. For being productivity is a tough thing. Oh, I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I think like there's a couple of things that help me to be more productive. One is like really taking advantage of time driving. So audiobooks and podcasts are like, I know it's not a tool, but it's dead time where you've got a lot of time there to kind of like learn or do something. So audiobooks are really key. I'm trying to think what like really transformed productivity. Oh, that's a really good question. Tool-wise, I have to say, Evernote's probably been the one tool I have used for 5-6 years maybe. I use it every single day to capture all my notes. Getting Things Done, the book GTD by David Allen, I think's probably had a massive impact on me as well over the years. I read that back in 2009 maybe, 2010 maybe earlier than that, and that had a massive impact on me about how, you know, only paper being touched once in the office and making sure you're capturing everything in the right places. So those sort of like philosophies have probably been more impactful than any one tool has been, because I think this is a big thing actually with especially in the entrepreneur space or the business space, is the tools. There's so many tools, you know, and at the end of the day, actually, it's got nothing, productivity has got nothing to do with the tool that you put in place. It's got everything to do with your own systems and processes, and then how the tools can actually help you be better at those things. I think that's the first step. The first step's to be productive, and then the second step is to put systems in place to help you be more productive, I think.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of getting things done. I think I discovered that in the early 1990s, and I've met one of the first editions. So I've been practicing that since then, although if I have a look at my desk at the moment, I probably need to have one of those.
I honestly believe that productivity is like that one massive resistance that we all suffer from. Like, you could go through periods of months probably being really, really good, and then all of a sudden you're like, it falls away for some reason, and you just need to get back, pick up the book again, you know, and you get back on it the next day. So
that's right. Yeah,
yeah. I don't want people beating themselves up all the time for not being productive, you know, because have bad days.
It is a case of focus, though, isn't it? And you kind of hinted at there's so many shiny tools out there for small business to kind of get distracted by.
Yeah, one of the things I was talking about recently on that one was really, like, for example, we've got the membership site there and everything, and people are saying things like, you should use Infusionsoft, you should be using HubSpot and all the rest of it. And I'm like, I don't even know I haven't even figured it out, like, manually yet. How am I supposed to figure it out? You know, I haven't figured it out manually yet, so how's a system going to help me right now? I need to map this. I need to figure out what works first, and then I'm going to make it look good, you know? And I think that was, I can't remember whose quote that is. Someone did say that. It was, make it work first, then make it look pretty, basically, was what they kind of... Yeah.
Well, that was actually one of the big messages that was given to us at this mastermind last week that I mentioned, and I hope that's in the good part of the interview, not the bit that I end up cutting out, but the message was, you know, don't automate stuff and don't use a shiny new tool to do stuff until you've figured it out manually.
Yeah.
You know, do it manually first, get it right, get the process right, and then when you need to scale it and, you know, you can't get on top of it manually anymore, then put it into a tool. But
because the danger is you start putting all these systems and processes and tools together and you haven't sold anything yet. Like, that's the worst thing you could possibly do. So you need to make sure that the market actually wants what you have first, and then you figure out a way to scale. Absolutely. I think that's absolutely key.
And that's a good message too. Make sure you can sell.
Yeah, that's a solid message.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it too many times.
Figure out what the market wants early on before you invest a lot of time and money in building something.
The key book, there's going to be loads of books in this probably, but like, there's two books that popped into my mind there. One is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. That's a fantastic book for anybody that's kind of like wants to kind of like touch a little bit more on like what we're talking about there. And the whole build, measure, learn cycle and all that, and the minimum viable product. That's absolutely key lessons for anybody in business is that, I would say, is testing the market and making sure you don't like put all your resource into something that's not going to actually sell. And then the other book I was going to mention, Jürgen, as well, is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, around about the productivity side of thing and resistance. I think if you haven't read that book and you're listening to this show, then you should absolutely go pick it up right now.
Okay, so who was the author of that?
Stephen Pressfield.
Stephen Pressfield.
I'll
look that one up and put a link to that in the show notes as well, because I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, well, once you've read it, Jürgen, send me a message.
All right.
Tell me how you feel.
I'll do that. Yeah. Will do. All right. So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Oh, I saw this. You sent me this question beforehand, and I was like, God, I don't know if I know the answer to this. I think for me, it's client works hard, right? It really is. It can be really difficult to keep on track, keep on the deadlines, making sure your team are performing, making sure that everything's on track, basically, especially if you've got multiple clients, right? Now, I've had a really good think about this over the years. I think the key thing for keeping a client on track is picking the right client in the first place. Someone that really believes in what you're doing, really believes in the value that you want to bring to the organisation, is willing to work with you. I think that that's where the relationship really starts, I think, is picking and the picking the right clients. That's the main thing. And if you can get the right client, then there's a good chance that a relationship is going to work out really, really well for you. And I mean, at the end of the day, the client's paying you to deliver something. And if you say, if you deliver what you say you're going to deliver and you meet their expectations, then that's good. Most people can't do that these days. I think that that should work. And if you're trying to keep them on track, then it's about communication every single time. Trying to predict what might be where problems might arise, trying to keep in regular communication with them. So using tools, for example, you could use Slack. We've used Slack for our clients before. Works really, really well. It gets off the email and it opens up the communication. Skype or whatever, video calls are really great for that too. So I think that one is getting the right clients in the first place, and then secondly is having a good, solid communication strategy for that relationship to blossom.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people answer that question with communication. That seems to be core to that. But you're the first person that's actually said pick the right client in the first place. And if you think about it, that just makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yes. I've been, if anybody that's got a client service type business, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. you get a bad client and it can really ruin everything. Like, you can ruin every other relationship you've got with your other clients as well, because you're putting so much energy into the one that's taking up all your energy, and it can have a
really, and you're resentful of it, and
it can have a detrimental impact on your whole business.
Yeah, that's brilliant advice. All right, so the last one is, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
The number one thing you can do to differentiate yourself is to learn faster than everybody else, I think, is to make sure that you are always learning something. You're continuing to advance yourself. Most people don't do that. I think that that's absolutely key. If you want to differentiate, you've got to continue to learn. Keep looking at things with a critical eye. You know, what's happening here? How's this going to affect my business? How can I help my clients with this? What the trends are? And just be open to learning new things, and be open to never think you know enough. You know, always be humble and learning. I think that's the number one way to differentiate yourself. And if you can do it faster, if you can learn faster, I think that will have a massive impact on your business and your life. And I think it will differentiate you from other people.
I love that. I love it. It's great advice. You know, two things there: always be learning and learn quick.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And be adaptable, I guess, around that, because take the lessons on board and apply them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I really love that. All right. So what do you see as the future for the Content Marketing Academy and the things that you're doing there?
Yeah, the whole Content Marketing Academy stuff is really interesting to me right now. I mean, we've went from doing client work to event stuff and workshops and all this kind of stuff. I've tried loads of different things in a fairly short space of time, I think. And the one thing that's really exciting me more than anything is the membership. The clients or the members that we have in there are getting the best results that we've seen from our clients. They're doing it in their own way. They're learning, they're developing, they're learning from each other. They're doing things that they never even thought they were going to do. And they, to be honest with you, they inspire me in my business as well. They're keeping me on my toes. So I think the future for our business is to grow and develop and build a solid membership organization. I know that is exactly what our business is going to be. So the future for our business is membership. And we'll still do client work and consultancy, but that'll all come through. Like, going back to that question about picking the right clients, our clients will come through our members, through our membership instead. So they go through a whole heap of education first before they even get to the point where they need us for the work that they need to get done. You know, the more help that they need on strategy or whatever it might be. So yeah, I think that's where our business is going.
Okay, that's great. All right, well, this has been really great. I appreciate all the time you spent with us, because we've kind of redone a large part of this interview, and hopefully I won't chop out any bits that we haven't duplicated. But just in conclusion, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation in their field?
is the number one piece of advice that I'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field or a business or a business owner?
Well, let's go with the business owner.
Yeah. I think the best thing you can do for yourself is believe that what you do is important to people. The work that you do is important, and believe that you're the best at it. I think that's, and leadership is not, it's not like a title or something that's, you know, something that's given to you. You can be a leader. Anybody can lead. It's a set of skills and communication skills. So if you're able to communicate like a leader and behave like a leader and believe that the work that you do is important, and believe in yourself, that you are the best at what you do, then I think that anybody can be a leader if they have those, that mindset. So I think it's all about mindset. Absolutely.
That's wonderful advice. I really love it. So be a leader. Because like you say, it's not something that's bestowed on you or that you're born with. It's a behavior and it's a belief, isn't it?
Yeah, I think. So the first thing to do, the number one thing to do if you want to be a leader in your field is to be a leader. Yeah, that's excellent. Kind of like that's what it is, really, is to behave like one, essentially. Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. No, it's been great spending time with you, Jürgen. Like you said, you had the technical issues, so thanks for being patient with me on that, and I hope that hope everyone that's listening has got some value from it today.
I'm sure they have. I certainly have. So before we finish up, where can people reach out and say thank you for all that you've shared with us?
No, thanks very much for that. I think if anybody really wants to reach out and say hello or ask a question or perhaps debate any of the content that we've covered today, you can get me on Twitter at ChrisMar101, and that's probably the best place to start a conversation with me, to be totally honest. So ChrisMar101 on Twitter and any other social media platform.
So we'll post links to that in the show notes as well. So finally, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Oh, right. See, I did think about this actually on the way in today to the office, and I thought that, if it's innovation you really want to talk about, this is shooting quite high, I think, is someone like Kevin Kelly would be like a great interview. I don't know him, so I can't do an introduction.
Okay.
But I think he would be cool to have on your interview. I don't know if you've heard of Kevin Kelly before, but he's a really interesting guy. And very much at the sort of forefront of all this stuff. Maybe someone like Joel Comm would be cool, because he's kind of like at the forefront of like live broadcast and social media, and he's kind of like a real tech. He would be really cool to have on your show as well. He's a bit of a sort of heavy hitter as well, so he'd be cool. Yeah, they would be cool guys, I think.
All right, well, that's great. We'll reach out to Kevin and Joel if you're listening to this, which they probably won't be, but you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
So if you're listening to this, we're coming to get you for a future Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Chris Marr.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So thanks again so much for your time today, Chris, and your insights. It's been really wonderful. I've enjoyed this immensely, and I've learned a lot. And let's keep in touch, and I wish you all the best for the future of the Content Marketing Academy. I think that you've got a great model there, and I'm going to read that Art of War book, War of Art book, and I'll give you my feedback.
It's a good book. Yeah, definitely get stuck into it. No, thanks for your time today. You're going to really appreciate it. I'm going to check out your Facebook Live stuff as well, so I'll jump onto that this afternoon.
Okay, yeah. Well, they're kind of a bit rough and ready at the moment, but I'm learning.
It's all good. You are. You're out there. You're doing it. So it's good stuff.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Thanks very much for your time today.
Well, that certainly was another valuable and educational episode. I hope you took notes and that you'll take some action as a result of some of Chris's advice. I certainly did. You might also like to check on Chris's Facebook Live posts, in which he shares more valuable information. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/Chris Marr. That is ChrisMarr. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/Chris Marr. For all of the links and everything that we spoke about in this episode. Chris suggested I interview Joel Comm of Infomedia and Kevin Kelly, co-founder of Wired, on a future Innova Buzz podcast. So Joel and Kevin, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from me for the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Chris Marr. Thanks for listening. pop on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe so you'll never miss a future episode. While you're there, you might leave us a review. We'd really appreciate that because reviews help us to get found and your feedback helps us to improve. If there's anything you'd like us to cover on future podcasts, questions you want answered, or guests that you might suggest that we get on another podcast, then please send them to us at info@innovabiz.com.au. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.